This podcast is brought to you by ORC HSE Strategies, an industry leader in developing innovative, sustainable approaches for protecting workers and the environment. ORC HSE is known as an honest broker and a source of responsible business positions on EH&S legal and regulatory issues. Now, what ORC HSE does is they maintain a constructive working relationship with policymakers in industry, labor, government, and key professional associations. And they keep all members abreast of important legal developments and help them navigate the thorny technical, legal, and regulatory issues that are our lives in EH&S. If you're interested in learning more about the unique opportunities available through ORC HSE, please contact our friend Linda Haney at 202-510-0509. Or, if you'd rather, drop her an email at linda.haney@orchse.com. That's Linda, L-I-N-D-A, dot Haney, H-A-N-E-Y, at orchse.com. Now, let's go on to the podcast. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your host today, I think. Let me check the sheet here. That's the sheet. Todd Conklin's my name. I just read it off the sheet. Today's a big day. I'm excited about today's podcast for a bunch of reasons. I think you'll find it interesting nonetheless. So everything's grand here. Trying to think if I have any exciting news. Just did the Bluegrass Festival, the rain-filled Bluegrass Festival. Which was fun but wet. Had a great time with friends from far and near. That's a really good way to spend a weekend, actually. Listening to people pluck the banjo, the instrument of love. It is love. You know what you call a beautiful woman on the arm of a banjo player? A tattoo. Thank you. No. It was a fun weekend. It's good to be back on the old podcast microphone as well. And, work is just chumming right along. I think things are going great. I hope you're doing good. Everything seems to be grand to get started on the next big adventure for us, which is something I'll just give a teaser. We're talking about doing a special workshop on learning, operational learning. And I bring that up because the host of the interview today for the podcast is the incredible Bob Edwards. And Bob picked up a podcast for us that I don't know how we would have got if he didn't pick it up. Because today's podcast involves mariners. So today you're going to learn about a whole new vein that has been sorely underrepresented on our podcast around this notion of working, on vessels out on the water. Those guys, the mariners. And they're going to talk a lot about how safety really exists for them in every single thing they do. I think you'll find this podcast super interesting. Their work is just amazing. And Bob was able to ride on a vessel, a petroleum vessel, and was able to sort of tag along, shadow maybe is the better word, a crew and kind of watch them actually create safety as a capacity in real time. I think you'll find this conversation with four guys off the same vessel very, very interesting. And in the way they talk about just a lot of really interesting things, like they're not really trusting their instrumentation, that they always verify, even though the instruments are accurate and modern and the best money can buy. They still take the time to verify things because verification is really important. And they have this sort of healthy sense of unease that they work with as mariners all the time. And their most important safety tool really are their eyes, their ability to look forward. It's a great interview. It'll start with some introductions. Then I'm going to tag in and talk a little bit more. And then we'll get deep into the interview. Just enjoy. I think you'll find this very, very, very interesting. Thanks especially to Bob. He was great to do this for us. Again, had he not done this, I don't know how he got it. So we got it. And that's a good thing. And I like this one because it really represents all aspects of the vessel and really all aspects of the industry. So let's listen to this. We can talk a little bit more on the backside. But until then, listen to Bob Edwards as he talks in great detail about the life and safety of a mariner.
Named Stephen Foster, I'm the master of a coastwise tanker. We were a Crowley managed vessel, and I've been doing this for about 26 years.
Good deal. All right, chief mate.
Ben Hopkins, chief mate, newly promoted. Started about I guess 9 months ago now. New to this vessel, but there's a great fit and great operation here.
Good deal. Chief Engineer?
Rowan Samuels, Chief Engineer with Crawley. I've been sailing chief for about 9 years now. Been working with Captain Foster for the last 6 years.
Good deal.
Tim O'Connell, First Assistant. I've been working with Crawley for going on 9 years. And this is my first or second trip as a First Assistant.
Okay, so this conversation was happening, and we captured it for the podcast kind of midway. So in the spirit of giving you context, thank you, Shane Bush, because context is important, what we're talking about now is sort of how this team of people gets together and actually performs high-risk work while riding on top of the high-risk work. If you think your job's risky, and it might be, I'm not arguing that, imagine your job having all the risk it has, and that's also the place where you stand, live, work, sleep, function, eat. I mean, these guys manage risk, and they got into a discussion around how they understand and manage data. Listen carefully, because I think this is really interesting.
Although you seem to have a really good trust amongst each other, I saw that you didn't necessarily trust data. So I'm an engineer, so I found that interesting. It's like, what's the level on that tank? Well, in here it says this. Okay, well, sound it, and also drop a stick in there. So why is it that you don't trust single points of data?
Error.
Failure.
Hanging everything on something that could be fail on you or give you bad information, which is worse.
The potential, you know, of not checking it and have something go wrong, you know, double or triple checking it, you know.
Plus, a lot of our background is from older vessels that had higher potential for failure. I know Ben's background on the vessel he had come from before he came to Crowley. And of course, I spent over 10 years on ships that were at the end of their lifespan. So there was a heightened awareness of possible failure. So we bring that with us. Having seen things fail also builds to our knowledge and how we approach things.
Right. Yeah, the experience is becoming you expect it to fail.
Yes.
And then after getting that, then you bring that, you know, to the new vessels where, you know, it's not as likely to fail, but you still have that unease or suspicion.
Chronic unease.
Never to trust a single point.
Yeah, chronic unease is
that's a term that you got. Yeah,
it's from a video. Yeah, it's an excellent term.
Yep.
I think it encapsulates what we've all experienced.
Yeah.
Just coming from a background of it's not if something fail, it's when will it fail?
Yeah.
It's usually at
2 or 3 in the morning
when you're sleeping. Yeah. But so we bring that over. These are new ships or newer ships, but we still bring those skills with us because just because the ship's new doesn't mean things won't fail.
Right.
So we still have that chronic unease and that, you know, things will fail. So what we do, you talked about multiple checks, checking data, that helps minimize what the failure, the extent of the failure.
Right.
So
and I love that term, chronic unease. It always makes me feel like I need to take some Pepto-Bismol. Got a little chronic unease, but it's sort of that operational humility, realizing that even a new ship can have a sensor that doesn't work.
Yes.
Definitely. As chief engineer, you've probably seen lots of times, even with new replacement parts, they don't necessarily always
match up.
What do they call it? Infant mortality with a product. Sometimes a new part actually will fail quickly in the first part of its like startup, like bearings and stuff like that.
Once it's worked in, then it probably works for a long time. But you have to have that run-in period, you know.
Right.
Another problem is all the automation. Everything's become so automated, and it's kind of seductive to just sit there and accept what's being fed to you. But you lose that situational awareness unless you go and double check the information.
Right.
One of the things I on the navigation side of ship operation is if you are in a marine incident, let's say a collision or something like that, you'll be asked, what did you see? And the Coast Guard will not accept, well, on the radar it showed this. They will not accept that. When they want to know what was visible there, as one of my instructors said, your Mark I eyeball. So having all these sensors and TV screens with numbers flashing across them is real nice and convenient, but it doesn't beat your Mark I eyeball. So mm-hmm. we like to have that, you know, I want to look at it. I want to see if this is actually the data matches the reality.
I actually saw, you may or may not remember this, but there was a young, you guys are like this school. It's like the whole time I was there, I was learning, but I noticed also you have a lot of young, like third mates and stuff, they're all there mm-hmm. learning. And I think you even asked that question, what's the most your most important tool when you're in the bridge? And they said something about radar or whatever. They said, oh, no, my eyes.
That's right,
yeah.
That's right.
What I found super fascinating is even your third mates were so interested in teaching me what they knew. I think you have built into your organization sort of the value of teaching people, and which brings me to the Hopkins method, right? So I joke about this with a lot of, I mean, not joke about it, but I talk about it with a lot of people. And Chief Hopkins, Chief Mate, thank you. mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I get corrected all the time. And I'm ex-military, but I still haven't got your rank structure figured out yet completely. Although I did, you and I made some notes last time we were together, so yes, I've been studying, but just failed again. So Chief Mate Hopkins, one thing I noticed was you were, the only meeting I saw you in was like a morning kickoff meeting, and then from that point forward, I rarely saw you standing still, right? So talk to me about your thinking around this. Why are you so in motion all the time with your vessel?
Well, there's a lot of things going on. Part of it, because I'm new to this vessel, you need familiarity. And so just needing to get familiar, see and touch everything to know exactly where everything stands. So I might be out a little bit more than someone who's been on the ship for 5 years. But I think it's also just part of the unease, to get out there. Some of it's management, I could delegate, I take someone off another job, but, I'd rather see it myself and allow more productivity, allowing the other guys to do their job, and then I can kind of check on them.
Right.
Like I said, while I'm taking care of what I'm doing, I'm also able to do quality control on the other work.
Yeah, I saw you and teach a guy how to tie some knots, right? it's like from me being I'm a civilian, right? I'm a non-mariner. I'm a engineer from shoreside, right? And so I'm thinking, okay, on the vessel, is it like the Pirates of the Caribbean? What's it like out there, right? But to watch you teach a guy the knots to tie in that barrel or whatever it was that wouldn't move around.
Oh, yeah.
Even something that simple is important because when the seas move you around, you want that stuff all secured.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say this, tell me if I'm wrong, you guys rest at night not because your paperwork is all perfect, but more because you know your team.
Mm-hmm.
That's my guess. Is
That's the thing. When you have new people, you try to teach them as much as you know, so you can sleep at night.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not because they filled out their. I'm not saying don't do JSAs and all that stuff.
No.
That stuff's all good because it'd be like sacrilegious to say that. But the reality is, I think you guys know your people. I mean, I met your what are the engineers that are training? What are they called?
The second and third
engineers.
Right.
Yep. And I watched your interaction with them and just always teaching and always, you guys have really built in the value of teaching and coaching and follow-up. And that's how you can get some rest at night, not because all the paperwork is filled out.
Mm-hmm. I feel teaching them the simple things, they're not going to be afraid to ask you questions when it comes to a big problem.
Yep.
If they have one. So the open door policy stands with me and as well as the chief and the captain.
Yeah. I actually saw a situation where Chief Mate Hopkins got it right, didn't I? I said, like, maybe if you guys don't mind getting that tattooed on your arm. Yeah,
right. And then I get promoted.
No, we can't promote you. It's set in stone.
But you and a third mate, I think it was, were discussing something about the way something was marked on one of the structures out there, whatever. And what I thought was really good is that you were also, you said, I'm pretty sure it's this way. And he said, no, I'm pretty sure I saw it like this. I think you guys went out there to look, and it did not line up with the drawing. But it was fine. Let's just fix the drawing, right? I mean, so it was not like, you know, I just thought it was really good. The interaction was, it's okay to challenge you, too, and say, well, no, I'm pretty sure it was like this. They didn't just say, well, okay, yes, sir. You guys were able to have that conversation. I think that's valuable, too. So tell me what you think is the sort of the key. Let's go with engineering first.
Yeah.
What is the key to your department, the way you and your team interact? What do you say is kind of your foundational belief around that?
Just good communication and having trust in each other, you know.
So I also see that you guys have sort of a rank structure, right?
Right.
I spent a long time since I was in the military, so I've lost a lot of my awareness of the rank structure. But I did find this interesting. Captain was fixing to walk in, and we were in there eating, and there was a couple of younger people in there, I guess third mate, right? And they were cutting up and a little bit loud and whatever,
some of the
right? Yeah, some of the cadets, right.
Yes.
And when you came in, you said, okay, guys, calm down, the captain's coming in. So it was just that sort of, well, it's just sort of that respect, right?
Yes, yes.
And because we have these young people, and they're learning about this world.
Right.
Now, I know nothing about your world, so it was all new to me.
Right.
But you're still coaching and mentoring. You didn't come down hard on him. You just told him, hey, calm down. Yeah, calm down. Captain's coming in. Right. So I think that that's good. We need to sort of set the expectation. Right. You didn't have to set him down and give him a verbal warning or whatever. I mean, you just said, hey, guys, calm down.
Right.
So what else? What would you say, Tim?
I would say I'd like to carry my culture where at home I treat people like I want to be treated, so I just take it to the ship with me.
Good. So the same sort of way that you treat people at home, you want to, yep. And it definitely, so I found something interesting too. I heard it today in today's training. They were talking about a softer, gentler kind of world. I don't see that at all. We're in a very, very competitive, very strenuous, very stressed.
High pressure, right?
If anything, I think I'm 54 years old, and my career, there's more of a pressure cooker now than ever before. So it's not a gentler, kinder time and way of doing stuff. I think it's a more collaborative approach. That's what I saw with you guys. You're in the ocean. Bad things can happen.
Right.
I had Navy training, so that helps me with the stress and
stay
calm and all that.
Yeah, yeah. Stay calm even when things get crazy.
Yeah.
Captain?
Well, I think I remember telling you before that I came up from ordinary seamen, and I remember sailing with the bad captains and with the good captains, and the same with the chief mates. And I always remember as an ordinary and as an able seaman saying to myself, well, if I ever become a captain, I want to be like this guy, but not like this guy.
Exactly. Right.
Because I remember the tension and the energy you lose with the tension when you have a bad leadership. So I strive to be more of the leadership that where people don't tense up,
right,
that will communicate and feel, you know, yeah, we all make mistakes, so we can make mistakes and know that we can recover and maybe learn from them. So, you know, the cat of nine tails and the yelling and screaming, I save that only for special occasions. I think that, again, what Tim said, a culture of respect. There is a hierarchy.
Right.
I am the captain. I have expectations of behavior. The chief preempted me on that.
Yes.
He was like the warning guy to come in. But I expect people's behavior to be within a certain level so that it helps improve performance and professionalism, as well as how we appear to our customer as well.
Right.
It's all very important. All ties in again. I'm not saying safety last or safety first. I know Mike Rowe talked about that in one of his talks,
right,
about should safety third.
Right.
But it all ties together. If we're professional, polite, we're clean, all those things tie together, it produces a safe, reliable operation. If we're a safe, reliable operation with clean uniforms and professional attitude, and we are attentive to our job with a very high standard, our customer, whomever that may be at the time, is going to say, these guys are great. This is who we want to see at our dock. And that's actually a question in audits by the oil majors is, do you want to see this vessel alongside your dock? So you get to, I take all that stuff into account, and that's kind of why where I try to go with it.
Well, even the appearance of your vessel, when we pulled into whichever port we pulled into, and we pulled next to some other company's similar style vessel, and it was just all kind of rust brown.
Yeah.
Right? And it was noticeable the difference between your nice painted deck and where everything is, if there's a problem, you can see it pretty easily. You don't have the color of the rust. That almost seems non-intuitive to me because I won't even know if it's rusty unless I get really up close and look.
Right. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, I don't want to take up all the time, I just wanted to add, we try with the crew, what I like to promote with the crew is to make them feel a part of the franchise.
Right.
If we've been successful with that on our vessel to the point where the guys who do this maintenance, the painting and the chipping on the outside, as well as the unlicensed engineer permanent guys were outstanding, is that they feel part of the program. They want to make the ship look good. So to them, it's a personal thing to maintain the standard. And when I do my monthly room inspections, the rooms are immaculate, which is unusual.
Right. But could you swing by my house? Because I got some teenagers that could use a little.
I got my cat of nine tails ready. But I think that's all. For me, that's a sign that they see that they're on a good situation, and they're proud of it, and they maintain it, and that's what we strive for.
Yeah, they're a part of the mission.
Yes.
And they feel it. And it's their vessel, too, and they feel that, right?
Very much so.
Yeah. So I've mentioned when I talked with some of you guys before, I have a son in the Marine Corps, and it's all about the mission, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you guys have that kind of feel to it. Chief, mate, Hopkins?
Close one. Yeah, I think, setting, I was once told, everything in life you judge by your worst experience. And so having good experiences, kind of helps you out a lot. But seeing, from ship to ship, the culture that's set and what an impact that has, from the captain down, that makes a big difference. And then instilling ownership, telling even the lowest guy, he's really the front line. It's like, you're the one that's actually looking at all this stuff. I'm looking at a million things a day.
Right.
You're the one there. So, you need to be the one looking to find something and bring it to me.
Yeah.
So then you get that ownership, then they realize that they're important and they take that responsibility.
Yeah. And that's that daily mentoring and coaching that you're doing all the time. Yeah. So you're not in a conference room. You're not on email. You're out there helping to really see how things are going. So good. So I think that's a good message right there. Good. I appreciate you guys taking some time. I know you just had a long day of training.
Yeah.
So to take a few minutes to do this, I really appreciate it. It's a message that needs to be heard. It applies way beyond just the maritime world. It applies to all of us in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And I'll keep talking about you guys out there and the good work you're doing.
There it is. Safety on the high seas. That's what I'm going to call this episode. What'd you think? So I'm going to speak a little out of school. First of all, special thanks to Crowley Petroleum Services, the Crowley guys. If you're really, really on your best behavior as podcast listeners, I'll run out and do one of these on tugboats so you can hear what the tugboat guys sound like or the articulated barge guys. There's a lot of stuff we could talk about with the maritime safety. But let's talk a little bit out of school. Let's talk about the journey that we're on that was reflected in the podcast you just heard. You've heard me say this a million times, but I think the two things we manage as it relates to the socio-technical interfaces, and it's not going to be human factors and it's not going to be process safety, although those things are super important. I think the two things we manage are confidence and capacity. And this podcast is a really great example of those two things. One of the things that Crowley does, which I think is remarkable, is they realize that the culture of the vessel is really set not by the vessel, but by the crew on the vessel. And that the captain really is the cultural influencer, the cultural leader of how that vessel is going to maintain and operate and how they actually provide service in a safe and reliable way. And they do that to a great extent by understanding that that culture exists because it's created on that vessel. And they really spend time thinking about creating a safe and reliable culture. And they don't see safety as an outcome to be obtained. They really see safety as a way that they do the work. It's a capacity that actually makes it possible to do the risk work they do on the open ocean, or even not on the open ocean, you know, as they pull alongside some company to load up with something. That's really an important part of this overall story, that confidence and that capacity, and then that professionalism that sort of creates the culture that is Crowley Petroleum Services. Big thanks to these guys. Special big thanks to Bob for doing that. It's a great little podcast. I'll tell you, it's perfect. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, keep listening. Tell your friends. If you can, jump on and write a review. I'm getting choked up emotional over the word review. That's pretty important as well. But until then, learn something new every single day. I bet you did today. Have as much fun as you can possibly squeeze into work. And for goodness sakes, be safe.